Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Say What podcast. My name is Hannah, and this is a podcast where we talk about things that people don't want to say out loud, but I will say them out loud. I'll do this for you. I will take that burden on and say the things out loud that you don't want to say. I got you. I am so excited to record today because we actually have another guest who has been on the podcast before, and she's coming back, and I love podcasting with her. Our missions are so similar. I feel like we're always on the same path with stuff, and I love it, and I just love her content. So we have Jess Seitz today from Pain-Free Intimacy. Jess, say hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you. We've recorded an episode before sharing your story and your experience with vaginismus, and it was so powerful. I had so many people, you know, respond to that and tell me like how much hearing your story helped them and how big of an impact it had on their life. And so I am just so grateful to have you back on the podcast. After that episode, I was like, okay, I have to have you back. I want to talk about dilating, and you're the perfect person to talk about that with, especially because you did like recently a whole series on your Instagram Reels about dilating. And I was like, oh my gosh, this was such good content. So I'm very happy to have you back on the podcast.
Yay. I'm happy to be here. And although dilating is not the most fun thing, it's super necessary and great to kind of break down a little bit further. So thanks for dedicating an episode to this.
Absolutely. So catch us up since the last time that you know been here. Is anything new happening? How is like coaching going? And also tell the new listeners a little bit about yourself, because I know there's new people listening. So maybe tell a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, awesome. So I'm Jess. I am an occupational therapist and a vaginismus coach. I guess something new is I'm about to, actually this weekend, I will get my trauma-informed pelvic health certification. So
Oh my gosh. That's so exciting.
Oh my gosh. Lindsay Vessel is an occupational therapist who's just, she's brilliant. And so she does this new trauma-informed certification for occupational therapists to help kind of unload some of the trauma that our body holds on.
Wow.
And not all of my clients, actually probably 90% of my clients don't have a history of sexual abuse or sexual trauma, but vaginismus, as you probably know, in and of itself has trauma tendencies. Our body kind of holds on to that trauma. So I'm so excited to kind of add all this into kind of the coaching experience that my clients will get. So yeah, that's the new thing. But basically, yes, I am an occupational therapist, a pelvic floor therapist, and I had vaginismus myself for 8 long years. Mm-hmm. I haven't always been in pelvic floor. Before that, I was working as a kind of a neuro-informed OT. I was specifically working with patients with chronic pain, helping them kind of battle against things like complex regional pain syndrome, fibromyalgia, some of those more like chronic whole body systemic kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so it took me way too long to kind of realize maybe vaginismus is more of this and I'm doing the wrong approach, or I need to expand my approach to how I, you know, battle my own personal vaginismus. So once I took what I was doing as a pain specialist in OT and used that with vaginismus is when I personally was able to finally like get past this and just see so much success. And that was 5 years ago. And so it's been 5 years and I still don't have pain. I have like desire and a sex drive. I initiate things now.
Yeah. That's huge. That's awesome.
Oh, girl, anyone who has vaginismus knows like the whole down experience you get with intimacy is frustrating. Yeah. So I'm glad to just like be on the other side of that. And now I get to help women all over the world be able to get past vaginismus and enjoy intimacy the way God truly designed it to be. So
yeah. Absolutely. That's so powerful. And like I said a minute ago, we do have a whole episode talking about her story. So I definitely recommend you guys like go back and listen to that episode. I will link it so you can hear like really in detail, you know, all of that and how she experienced healing. But that's so exciting that you're getting that certification. You know, it's always good to like learn more and, you know, like grow in that area. And so like, that's really cool that you're going to be able to have that to be able to offer, you know, more just in-depth things with your clients. Like, that's so cool. That's so exciting.
I'm so excited. So I get to go to Arizona this weekend for an in-person lab kind of stuff. So
cool. I've never been to Arizona. Have you been to Arizona?
I have. I love it. We actually almost moved to Arizona when we moved back to the States last year.
Really?
We moved to Tucson, and Florida ended up winning out. But yeah.
Nice. That's cool. That's exciting. Well, today I wanted to talk about dilating because I still get like so many questions about dilating. I don't know if you feel this way, but when you have like a niche in your, your field and you talk about something all the time, sometimes it feels like everyone already knows this. But then I get messages like from people all the time that are like, how do I do this? How do I do this? And I'm like, oh, that's right. Not everybody knows this. Just because I talk about it all the time doesn't mean that this is like a known thing. And so I have an episode that's honestly, I think now a couple of years ago at this point, called Dilating 101, that you guys can go back and listen to. But it's been a long time since I've talked about dilating in specifically. And so I wanted to talk about it today because I really want to focus on the mental load of dilating, because obviously dilating is very physical activity. And there's a lot that comes with that physically. But I want to say, maybe not even more so mental, because there's a physical aspect to it. It's pretty equal, honestly. I would say like the mental part of dilating and having to, like, you know, find the motivation to dilate, and having, you know, the different thoughts around dilating, trying to be positive versus negative, because our thoughts really do control a lot of, you know, our body's response to things. And so just there's so much mental load in our lives, but there is, I think, a lot of just feelings around dilating. So I want to talk about that today, but could you actually just give us a quick like overview of just what dilating is in general, if someone does not know what that is?
Yeah. So dilating is kind of like what you said, is one of those things that are part of vaginismus that sometimes we just don't recognize that, like, oh yeah, we need to talk about this.
Right.
Actually, I did a whole like Dilator 101 reel series for this very reason, that I was like, I this is important.
Yes.
So yes, dilating is, you know, kind of the elephant in the room of vaginismus, but you have these like graduated cylinders, essentially, that can start about the size of maybe smaller than your finger, and they can go up to the size of, you know, your typical average male penis.
Yep.
They're made of different materials, either plastic or silicone, but you just gradually kind of increase your body's tolerance to that size.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions with dilating is that you are stretching the muscles out.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you've had surgery or torn in that area previously, like through a vaginal delivery or something, you're really not doing a lot of stretching.
Right.
You're actually just retraining the muscles. And so they're sometimes called vaginal trainers, because mm-hmm. we're just training those muscles to learn how to keep it cool when we get a bigger thing inserted. So,
right. Yeah. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can actually see she has some dilators behind her. So if you're watching, then they have one right there. So, and they often, I feel like people confuse them with sex toys, and they are not a sex toy. There's nothing wrong with sex toys. Let's make that so clear. Like there's truly nothing wrong with sex toy, but it is important to differentiate a dilator from a sex toy, because if you do have personal conviction about sex toys, you may not want to use them, but this dilator could be really helpful for you in your healing journey. And so knowing that it's not a sex toy and it is a medical device can just be huge for your, like, you know, thoughts around dilating and actually getting you to dilate if it's something that you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're medical devices, medical grade silicone, all of the stuff, you know.
Yes.
Medical.
So what is your, you know, I think with the mental load of dilating, it can be so draining for people to be like, okay, I have to dilate. I don't want to dilate. Like, there's just so many like anxieties around it. Like, what is your personal experience with, like, just in general, the mental load? Do you feel like you were able to be like, okay, I'm excited to dilate. I'm going to dilate once a week. It's going to be awesome. And it wasn't really a mental load for you? Or, you know, in your experience with coaching, like, what have you heard from people? Is it something that people like look forward to? Or are they more just like that I'm dreading doing this?
Oh, look forward to. I have had, no, for me, I would never look forward to them.
I didn't either.
I don't recommend this, but I called them failure tubes for the first part of my vaginismus journey.
Oh, no.
They are just reminders of like what my body can't do. I have to do this. Nobody else has to have sex. And so I called them. I don't recommend calling them failure tubes. We need to have a better mindset. But back then it was just, that's
just where you were at.
Where I was. I do have one client who actually, I love her. And this is not typical, but within 2 weeks of working with me, she was able to transition to pain-free sex, which is great.
Oh my gosh.
She was not actually, it was awesome. She did a lot of the nervous system work. I was able to get her body to just show up, and it's great. I won't say that's a typical story. I've had a couple that is a short time frame, but anyway, she actually was not able to insert dilators, even though she was having pain-free sex.
And so, no way.
In the program to work on getting dilators in, because she was so excited to get dilators. And I was like, girl, you are crazy. I do not understand, but I support you. I will be here for you and your goals. But I would be moving on and throwing this in the trash can. But
But if that's what you want, hey, I get it. But that's wow.
I think for most people, these are something they dread. They're not the most fun. It's a necessary evil with vaginismus, but there are things we can do to better support that process and make it something that we can shift our mindset and celebrate and have fun with them. So in my own experience, it took a lot to get excited to dilate.
Yeah, I know. When I like first got them and it had to become part of my routine, I just remember being like, I already have painful sex. Like, I'm already anxious. I'm already in therapy. I'm already going to pelvic floor therapy. And you're telling me I have to do this one other thing. Like, I'm exhausted. Also, like, what time of day am I supposed to do this? Because like, I'm working, I'm, you know, going to therapy, going to physical therapy, doing all these things. I'm like, this is one more thing. But I dreaded it so much, but I did find so much, you know, growth in my healing journey from dilating. Like, I really started to experience healing. And that, I will say, once I started like getting better, I had like a better, you know, outlook on dilating. Cause I was like, oh, I actually do see some progress is being made. And once you see progress, that's actually really helpful in your dilating journey. But I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. I don't know that I ever like looked forward to doing it. So what are some ways that someone who is dilating can view this in a way that like, that is a more positive experience rather than a chore? So I think so many of us really do just see it as a chore, as just like one more thing we have to do. And like you said, it's like frustrating. It's like other people don't have to do this to have sex, and I have to do this to have sex. And so what are some ways that we can, you know, view this as not a chore?
Yeah, I think the big thing is kind of keeping your perspective on what is your why? What mm-hmm. is the ultimate, yeah. what's your goal? I have my clients week one of working with me. They have a, kind of an inspiration sheet I have them fill out that has a whole bunch of leaves and a tree and all those great things. And it's like kind of like writing out their why behind they want to do this. And the why I encourage them is not just to have pain-free sex, because that might not be big enough. When we really start lacking desire and we're really like, is it worth it to even have sex? Like, we can do other things. Like, that why for some of us isn't strong enough. So really dig deep into what is your personal why for why you want to get past vaginismus. You know, there's many reasons. It could be just like freedom to wear tampons. It could be freedom to be able to show up at the gynecologist and feel like a woman who's got a body she can trust to be healthy. It can be like wanting to not even have the mental gymnastics before you're intimate. Like, any of these things that could be the why, that's what I encourage you to write that down. Simple, write it out. Doesn't have to be a whole journal page. It could be. And then, you know, cut it out, print it out, put it in a frame and put it by your dilators. And then just like, that is it's your grounding thing to come back to that why. And that in those moments where you're seeing like just failure, I say failure, quote unquote failure, not seeing the progress you want. You're frustrated beyond all belief. You don't understand why you have to go through this and no one else. That's all of those negative thoughts come in. You mm-hmm. have that central why to come back to.
I also like to go off of that. I saw that you had posted, it might've been a reel. I can't remember if it was a reel or a post, but you were talking about having your dilators like out on your nightstand, like not having them hidden, and how that can help like desensitize your like, you know, thoughts to it. And I think when you said like have your why next to your dilators, I just thought about that. Like, you know, not storing your dilators in a place that's not like, you know, hidden away. I was just thinking about that when you said to store or to have your why next to your dilators, you know, have it on your nightstand.
Yeah. And I think like a huge part of this is desensitizing to the dilator. Like for me, when I was going through vaginismus, they were hidden. They were in their nightstand. They felt like I just didn't love it. And then, right. you know, now I dance on social media with dilators in my hand.
Right. I know. Same. So. I will say, if you have kids, that might be a little bit difficult. Tate did get into my dilators the other day. They were just like in the office floor, and he like walked into his room and like holding it. And I was like, good. I was like, your mother does talk about sex on the internet. I'm so sorry. This is just like what you have. They were clean. Like it's ones that I use just for like showing things or whatever, but it just really made me laugh. I was like, okay, this is definitely my child right here walking in with my dilators.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to grow up having great confidence and understanding his
body. I was like, I would have to tell him that he's gonna really have to like chill with what he tells people, because I feel like he's gonna be the kid who knows like everything about everything, and he's gonna need to like really like chill out and not tell everybody. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Go Tate, I love it. Yeah. So all that you said, desensitize to him, like leave him out. I have my clients name them funny names. One, I hate when we call them numbers. I'm on the fourth out of six or whatever. It's like, stop. Cause that's just one big, that in of itself is a measure of progression. Like if you're on 4 to 6, you know, you're 2 away from your goal. You've only made it 4, you know, all it's just like that alone makes you remind yourself of that. You're not at your goal. So let's take the numbers away. Let's call it something else. I don't care. Call it the color. Name it a stupid name. I have one client who's named hers cities that her and her husband have traveled to, and the goal dilator is their city they're going to travel to when she graduates from vaginismus. So it's like she's
love it.
Currently on Paris, but she's working towards Tokyo. And yes. It's like, yeah,
that is
great.
So powerful though. Like I gave the rod in my leg a name because I was like, I feel so disconnected from this. I was like, I need to like start to view this rod in my leg as like part of me, and not necessarily that your dilators have to be part of you, but it really does help just like, you know, even just lighten the mood with it. Like when I think about the rod in my leg, I'm like, oh, me and Tibby just hanging out together. And then, you know, your dilators, her, you know, her and Paris are just hanging out. Like, you know, it's just a more like positive experience with it, interaction. Oh,
yeah. And you can have fun. I think we just need to give ourselves the freedom to not see these things as so scary and to start having fun with them. You know, I joke around like, hey, set them up as bowling pins, take a ball and knock them over. I don't care. Like do whatever you do. I have one client glue googly eyes to them. So we just try to have fun and like making this not such a chore, and like chores are fun. So let's make it fun. Let's do great things with them. So yeah. Yeah. I would say another thing that can, you know, help make this less of that chore is to, I love when I have clients like log their success. We sometimes only think progress is if we can get the dilator in more or we can go up a size. And I love that we're like trying to see the positive in this, but if that's your definition of progress, things are happening in your body that you're not going to be able to measure.
Right.
You know, even if you have to go down a dilator size, but you still showed up for your body, you were regulated, you were able to like not experience like the same kind of drama internally with the going down a size, to me, that's growth. And so that's a win, even if it's not your, so changing our definition of success. And so I like to change those shift from progress to growth. And if we're looking at growth, growth happens in ways we cannot physically see. Growth can happen just by showing up for ourselves. We grew that day. And so I think when we change how we define success with dilating, we start to get excited more because growth is happening regardless.
Absolutely. And I think that's so good, especially with dilating. Focusing more on like mindset rather than physical, because dilating is something that can take a long time. It typically takes a long time to retrain your body. And so if you are just focused on physical, you know, progression, it really could feel like, okay, nothing is happening. This is going forever. But if one day you showed up to dilating in a more, you know, positive mindset or like feeling really excited about it, that in itself, like you said, is growth. And that should be a win that you are taking as a success, rather than just saying, well, I haven't had any success because I'm, you know, still at the same size. It's like, well, how's your mindset about it? How are you feeling about it? Are you feeling, you know, less stress in your body, or mentally, are you not dreading it as much? Like that in itself is a win. I think that's so important. I think you're so on par with that.
Yeah. And if you write those down, you have something to come back to in the moments where you're just like, I haven't seen, you know, quote unquote success in 2 weeks. I'm over it. I'm frustrated. But if you have kind of like those lists of things, like those Ebenezer moments that you can like check back in and be like, you know what? I never got to this point. I remember when I did this, or I've been able to wear tampons now. I haven't worn tampons in 20 years or whatever. Right. Like those are the things you can come back to and be like, no, I have seen growth. I just don't feel it in this moment right now. Right. So I definitely recommend writing down the things that you can kind of come back to, so you can reflect on that as well as your why.
So. Totally. Totally. No, that is so, so good. That's so good. One thing that I feel like we talk about a lot with this, and I see you speak about this a lot, is regulating your nervous system, which I love. I think that's so important. Me going to acupuncture was a way that I regulated my nervous system. And that was a tremendous part of my healing journey. Like it was a huge piece of it, was going to acupuncture. And that's how I regulated my nervous system. And so can you just talk a little bit about that? Like, what does that even mean? How do you regulate your nervous system? Why is that important? Just like, what does that even mean? And how does that go with dilating?
Yeah, nervous system regulation is the backbone of my program and all of the stuff that I do. It is at the most basic level, the thing that we must do in order to function in this world. And so it's huge, it's important, and it can make or break your recovery with vaginismus. If you think of like, I guess there's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs is one of the frameworks, but just imagine a triangle. And at the bottom level of the triangle is the foundation that you need to have in order to kind of move up the triangle. And we'll just say like beating vaginismus is at the top. And so at the bottom, we do have to have a nervous system that's regulated. Like we have to have a body that is in that state where it's able to learn, it's able to grow. And if we're not in a state where we can learn and we can, you know, build resilience, we're just going to continue on a downward spiral. A lot of things go into nervous system regulation. Like it is, you know, I spend a lot of times with my clients here, and I have over 30 different strategies that we go over. So, and it looks different for everyone. So acupuncture works great for some, for others, not so much. Breathing works great for some, for others, not so much. I can't stand yoga. I just, you know, for me, it is really dysregulating to do yoga. So figuring out what that means for your body is going to be what's key, and then supporting your body throughout the day, but also during those more stressful events like dilating. So basically, like, we have, you know, two, and there's, you know, this, we can get more complicated with talking about this, but in simplicity, there's kind of our automatic nervous system. Our autonomic one is the one that kind of like happens involuntarily. It's the nervous system that controls our organs, all of our kind of like breathing and functioning that we don't even think about, the autonomic stuff. And then within that, we have a fight or flight response, that stress-based response, and then we have the calming response. That's a sympathetic versus the parasympathetic nervous system. And the goal is for those to work together well. If, you know, we need both of them in our everyday. We go into both of these states regularly. And if you're talking about arousal and intimacy, we need these to work together well. And this is why a lot of my clients with vaginismus, you know, if your sympathetic nervous system is calling all the shots, we can't even really get aroused well. Orgasms aren't going to be able to happen because you've not balanced those nervous systems well enough to be able to jump from calming to stress back to calming for the whole orgasm event to happen because pain is there. So anyway, we need to be able to get our body to exit out of that sympathetic stress-based response into that calming system while we're doing some of the more challenging activities, like dilating, or partner work or whatever it might be. So that is a skill that we can learn. And again, unfortunately, not everyone has to put this much effort into their body. Right. But for us who are a little bit on the dysregulated side, we do. We need to figure out how to balance this better and to support ourselves better. And that's when we'll really start seeing a lot of progress.
Right. Yeah. I remember going to like the very first time I went to a pelvic floor physical therapist, not the one that I ended up working with, but when she was like doing an exam on me, she was really like, your nervous system is absolutely insane. She's like, we can't even do any kind of therapy on you. So I have to give you diazepam and you have to take this medicine to calm your body down before I can even like, we can even do a single thing. And I was like, okay, calm down. I also don't want to take medicine. Number one. I was like, this does not like, I was like, you're stressing me out more now telling me this and like kind of being so like, ugh, about it. I was like, okay. Like, so I started taking the diazepam, terrible, huge regret. You could don't ever want to do that again. But then when I went and talked to the new person that I saw, she actually like spoke to me about it in a way, kind of how you did, explaining it a little bit more. And she was like, we can definitely do things now to help with this, you know, process, and regular nervous system is a big part of it. And we're going to be doing that while we're working. It's like part of your healing journey, not like step one, or you have to do this first, then you can work on healing. She's like, it's all like all in one, like that. This is what we're doing to help you get to healing. And so that's why we started with acupuncture. And I saw a lot of success with that, because we also learned some different breathing exercises as well. But it really is just like so important. Like I had to get my nervous system to just like chill before I feel like we could really do a lot of things. So
yes, for sure. And if someone listening out there and they have been prescribed a medication, that's often why. It's usually diazepam or nortriptyline, amitriptyline. All of those are kind of like your doctor's trying to hack in to getting that nervous system to calm down. I was on medication. I did not find it helpful. It actually was much worse for me. It caused me to have tachycardia and like elevated heart rate, which just was so much worse.
Yeah.
Get me off this thing.
Right.
So if that's what you're experiencing and you feel like you're a failure because you've tried the medication and you didn't like it, it's okay. There are other ways we can get the nervous system to calm down.
We love modern medicine. I'm on an antidepressant to help with my anxiety, and that is very helpful for me, but it was not what I needed for my vaginismus. Like, so.
Yeah. And it can't, like you said, it can be helpful for some, but if it's not been helpful for you, it's okay. You're not a failure. Not all hope is lost. We can do this.
Totally. You know,
yeah.
So how does this like relate specifically to dilating? Because I know it's like super important for us to like regulate our nervous systems to help with our healing process from vaginismus, but with dilating specifically, like how does this relate to that?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to try and dilate and your nervous system's already in either hyper aroused or hypo aroused, like just not in that good spot, it's going to show. You're going to get super frustrated. You might shut down. Your pelvic floor is just going to tense up, and you're going to like, you're just not going to see progress for sure. Like if you're going to dilate from a state of dysregulation, that's when we really just enter into frustration zone and our body is frustrated too. So a huge part, I try to get my clients, like, you know, the dilating process isn't just like lay on the bed and shove some dilators in. Like our dilating process, we spend more time on mindset and regulation and less time on the actual dilating, because I find the other stuff supports a really quality dilator session better than just trying to like finick around for like, you know, 30 minutes and be like, okay, I did it, but it wasn't quality, because quality is our goal. So to getting that regulation before and in that process and staying regulated with the dilating will make for a quality session. The more quality sessions we have, honestly, the faster we get past this.
Totally. Is there like a physical state that you will feel when you are, when your body's in like a regulated state versus a dysregulated state? Because I think some people are still just trying to understand their body and listen to its cues. And I feel like me and you are, you know, we're very well versed with our bodies. We know what our body is saying to us, but we listen to it. But I don't think that's the case for everybody. So like, would, how would they know that their body is regulated versus dysregulated?
That's a hard question.
Yeah, that might be a harder question. That's totally fine. I know, like, maybe feeling tense, but there could be more than that too.
Yeah, tense is a good one. Elevated heart rate, anxiety, but also frozen, shut down, don't want to, avoidance are also signs. You know, maybe like what would be a regulated system is going to be like feeling more on the relaxed side, feeling confident, feeling like you have like a curiosity or ambivalent perspective, you know, feeling like, yeah, it's hard because it's easier to say what it's not. So
right. No, that's so true.
And it's different for everyone. I do teach my patient or my clients a lot of times how to understand where their body's at. We have assessments that we do to try and connect back in to know what level you're at, what you, and they have strategies to bring themselves back into a state of regulation. Wow. It's unique to all of them. So it's all about like what number are you at on the scale and how do you get yourself back to a regulated number?
Right. I think one thing for me when I was just trying to learn what my body was saying to me and what it wasn't, I remember being in therapy and we would do brain spotting in therapy, which is just like a tool that you can use to kind of deregulate thoughts, memories, things. And I loved brain spotting. It was so helpful for me. But something we'd always do during brain spotting is she would tell me like, where am I feeling anything in my body? And I'd always like second guess myself. And she's like, no, like whatever came first to your mind, like, what do you feel? And so we kind of go from there. But something that I didn't notice that was affecting my pelvic floor was I would always feel really tight in my jaw. And then she explained how, like, because you may not know that your pelvic floor is actually tight. Like you may not be able to like recognize that, like, oh, that is feeling tight, that is feeling stressed, or whenever I'm inserting things, I'm tensing up. But you may not recognize that beforehand, but you may have a tight jaw all the time, but your jaw is actually connected to your pelvic floor. And so that's a way for you, I think, to know that things may not be, that things aren't regulated. And I never had made that connection and didn't realize that until we were talking about that in therapy one day, which is like the connection between your jaw and your pelvic floor. I had no idea.
Yeah. It's strong. Actually, it's pretty strong. A lot of women who have vaginismus do have jaw pain.
Yep. It's something I still, I feel like I'm working on is having really intense jaw pain, but I'm always just trying to, but I have pain-free sex and it's great, which is beautiful, but jaw pain is still there sometimes. Okay. Let's do some questions now because we got some really good questions from some people. Some we had already answered during this episode, so I didn't write them down, but here are some questions from the listeners, from you guys. So someone said, how often should you dilate?
Yeah. So it depends. We'll tell you to defer to your personal pelvic floor therapist. Always follow their plan of care and what they have for you. I do have my own protocol that I work with my clients, and I teach my clients how to understand how much they should dilate based on their nervous system and what they need for their recovery. And so I can't even tell my clients like, this is the time that you should dilate. I mean, in general, probably anywhere between 2 and 5 times a week. Some people say you shouldn't dilate back to back. I haven't found any research to support that. So if you feel like you want to dilate 2 days in a row, go for it. As long as your pelvic floor therapist supports that. So always defer to your personal provider and what their recommendation is. But yeah.
Totally. No, when I was dilating, I think I was doing it. My provider told me or suggested that I do it, I think, twice a week. And I was definitely not doing it twice a week. I was doing it once a week. And then once I was like, kind of got over myself, I did start doing it twice a week. But for a while, I was just doing it once a week because I was just like, I hate this. I don't want to do it. And so I can only get myself to do it once a week. But yeah, it really does. I included this question because I knew it was a hard one to answer, but I think everybody's always just like, how much should I do this? And so I at least wanted to talk about it. But yeah, I think, like you said, the general like 2 to 5 times. But it really depends on what I think plan your therapist has for you.
Yeah. And if it makes anyone feel any better, I scoured research on vaginismus and pretty much know everything there is out there. I mean, that I've been able to find. There's not one thing that's like, this is what the research says. So neuroplasticity and neuro reeducation is so individualized. So what works best for you is not going to work best for someone else.
Totally. Totally. So the next question we got is what to do when you cannot progress from one size to the next? It feels like progress is stalling.
This is a common thing. This is part of everyone's battle with vaginismus is this. And it is like, if I could just would define vaginismus, progress is just all over the place. And so we do
go so up and down. It's so, so up and down.
The first off is just like, take a deep breath. You're normal. That's like typical. And pat yourself on the back for joining in the awesome cool girls club of vaginismus. But that doesn't
I don't
help
know that I know one person, honestly, that it just like started from bottom and just slowly went up all the time. Like I really don't know if I've talked to anybody that has been the case.
So I would say like, take a break. If this is something that's just really frustrating for you, you've been on the stylator for a while. I encourage my clients, hey, take a week off, take 2 weeks off. If you understand like neuro reeducation and how all this works, taking 2 weeks off is not going to set you back at all. It might just be what your body needs for kind of coming back in a little bit more refreshed and out of that frustration cycle, allowing that curiosity mindset. So taking a break might be the best thing for you at that point. But also you can focus on an easier task. Go down a dilator size without shame, without judgment, without frustration, and just enjoy an easier dilator. Try new things with the easier dilator. Try, you know, different movements, try different positions, try moving your body and keeping the dilator still. Have fun with the easier dilator to get your body feeling confident and you know, in control, and then come back to, you know, maybe after a week of doing that, then come back to the current dilator you're working on. And you know, that can just be enough to help give your body the confidence it needs. And then just shifting your definition of success to growth, being at the current dilator you're on, if it's been 6 months at the same dilator, you might feel like you're not progressing, but your body is making huge leaps and bounds in ways that you just aren't seeing. So like we talked about this already, but shift your definition of what progress is to growth and yeah.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts on this? I'm trying to remember exactly what you said. I was in therapy and we were talking about this part, like vaginismus, and how I felt like I was just like one day I was healed and the next day I wasn't. I was, this is what it was. And I had to really go back to thinking. I had pain-free sex. And then I remember telling her, I was like, I don't want to say the word like cured or healed because I'm so scared that like it's going to hurt again one day. And then that just means I'm not healed anymore. And something she had said to me, and we can talk about this because we're both Christians, is she was like, what the Lord heals, you're not necessarily going to have like a setback, like healing just might look different. Like, it doesn't mean that you're like not healed anymore. It's just like part of the journey because things happen and things come up. What are your thoughts on that? Do you feel like you agree with that? I feel like I do. Sometimes I go back and forth. I'm like, but you do, you can have a setback, but maybe you don't have a setback. Like, what are your thoughts on, I guess, like setbacks? That's a big question. Sorry.
Big question.
Oh, you were thinking about that when we were talking about this. So it's okay. We can cut it if you want.
No. So setbacks are, I think, a mindset and a framework that we apply. So if you have a setback, it often is a negative connotation to it. It would suggest that you're not making, like I said, you're not making that progress. But if we change it to growth, which I am like with my clients are repeatedly, it's like, it's growth, it's growth, it's growth. Like if you are experiencing a different outcome from like the dilator sessions recently, that outcome you don't like, doesn't necessarily mean that you're not moving forward because like I said, growth is a bigger process. Like we do in the whole growth continuum, we have ups and downs. So if you think of the vaginismus journey as having mountains and valleys, there is an upward trajectory in that. So you may feel like you're coming down, but the trajectory is still upward towards growth. And so when we think that we've had a setback, we tend to spiral. We tend to get in our heads. We tend to, and that dysregulates us. We get into a hyper-aroused state. We shut down. We, you know, get our, we just get so dysregulated from our own mindset of a setback, that we feel like we're a failure. We feel like we're wasting our time. We feel like we're never going to get there. We've wasted money, resource, whatever. Yeah. That alone will stifle progress. So when you can shift into a growth thing, like, I'm not seeing the physical outcomes I'm used to, but I know that the growth is happening and I'm still in the upward trajectory. That just completely changes the way your body's going to interact with the whole dilating experience.
Yeah, no, that's so good. I agree with all that, with it being like a mindset thing, like being a, you know, just shifting that progress. I think that, you know, goes with like, the Lord has healed you, and the healing process just may not look like what, you know, people define success as or define healing as, but it doesn't mean like the Lord took away the healing that he gave you. I think that was something I was just like really struggling with that like aspect of it.
And God works in his own way. Like, his ways are higher than our ways. And I today was actually just reading in 1 Samuel, and it's like David is in the desert of Judah or something. And he's like writing a psalm about how he's so parched and thirst, but yet he's crying out to the Lord. And I'm like, David at this point knows that he is king. He knows that he is going to take the throne from Saul. God has promised this to him, but yet he is sitting in the middle of the wilderness in Judah with 600 men around him craving water. And he's calling out to the Lord. And like, God knew David's journey was going to look like this. He is not any less of a king. He's not going to, that throne is going to not be any, it's still going to be there for him. Like, he's still going to get to that throne, but we're going in a desert.
Yeah.
And he's going to cry out to God in this desert. And those crying outs formed the Psalms that probably were a foundation for his time in the throne, also for Jesus's time here on earth, who's talked about the Psalms, and also for my morning quiet time this morning.
Right.
And so David in the desert, like, he wasn't any less of a king. He didn't any less get that experience as king, but God brought him in the desert and he cried out in faith. And so that's called dilating our desert. We're going to cry out in faith, and we're going to know we're going to get to pain-free sex. That is God's ultimate plan for us in marriage, is to enjoy intimacy.
Yes.
We will get that in some way, shape, or form. But we're going to cry out in the desert of Judah and thirst for God in this.
Yeah. Wow. Chills. I have chills. You're so right. You're so right. Sometimes it is dilating in the desert. Sometimes it's dilating. I think that's going to be that should be the title of today's episode. Dilating in the desert. That's so good. We have a couple more questions. I always feel sore for about 2 days afterwards. Should I be concerned?
Not necessarily. There are a slew of things that our bodies like to do in response to dilating. Bleeding, a lot of times bleeding is the one I get asked a lot of questions to. Is it normal to bleed? Usually if you go up a dilator size, you'll bleed. Is it normal to have burning when you pee afterwards? Unless you probably don't have a UTI unless you're prone to them, but yes, like the pelvic floor muscles working up against the urethra are going to cause burning maybe for the day or so after dilating. And so the soreness is another one of those things that sometimes our pelvic floor muscles are just sore. I wouldn't be concerned, but I would try and find ways that you can maybe try and support your pelvic floor better with the dilating process, whether that means like I have a stretching routine I give my clients to do before dilating and after if they need to. Not everyone needs it, but maybe just kind of incorporate some stretches before to kind of warm up, some movement stretches like cat-cow or, kind of like a rocking pigeon kind of thing, whatever, you know. Again, whatever your pelvic floor therapist gives you, and then dilate. And then afterwards, maybe repeat those just to kind of get some more blood flow to the area, loosen up some of that inflammation that's kind of been built there. And that can maybe help, just like if you were going to go for a run or try a new exercise, you have that soreness the next 2 days, but there are things you can do to help be less sore, like stretching and warming up. Similar things like that can help, but I wouldn't be concerned. I just would start learning how you could support your body better with that.
Yeah, no, that's a good word. That is a good word. The next question, what is your self-care routine after you finish a dilating session?
I would say this is kind of similar to the last one. But I personally, for myself, had to learn to not just jump up from dilating and go to start making dinner or get out of the room as fast as possible, but trying to like, and this is good practice for intimacy and sex too, because like, after you're done with sex, you don't just want to jump up and clean up. You want to still, come down from that, enjoy the time. So I try to have my clients mimic sex as best as possible. So after dilating, have that moment where you reflect on it. What went well? What were your fears beforehand? Were those fears like true? I do have like a reflection guide my clients go through so that we can kind of connect back in. And then, you know, do maybe some stretches afterwards to just kind of like bring your nervous system back down. Maybe schedule going for a walk afterwards. So you can, if you got dysregulated during dilating, you can come back down and end kind of the whole experience with a regulated nervous system, which will help support you next time for getting into that regulated state sooner.
Nice. Word. Okay, this will be the last question. How to incorporate your partner during this time of dilating?
Hard, different for everyone.
Yeah.
I would say the main thing, and it depends on where you're at in your marriage, your experience, and everything, but is to prevent re-traumatization. The whole goal with dilating is to do it in a safe, secure way where we don't re-traumatize the body and promote that response.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
partner integration piece, if you do this too rushed or don't have the right communication and stuff with that, it can further compound that transition from dilator to penis,
yeah,
which with my clients, it's everything from day one, we're working on transition from dilator to penis.
Right.
And so we want to do that well. So I would say the biggest thing is going to be communicating with your partner, like, where are we at? What do I, my needs are, how am I feeling? Communication is going to be the foundation of being able to, you know, make sure you do this well. Probably. I mean, I have a whole protocol in my program, like I said, that supports clients in this. But the biggest thing I would say is to maybe establish a safe word, or, you know, like a traffic light system, like green, yellow, red. And so that you can start building trust that your partner will stop if something's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so you, in that moment where you're dysregulated, might not have the words to say, like, hey, I'm not feeling comfortable. So if you have a color system that's very basic, like, I'm feeling yellow. He knows what yellow means. He has a plan for what yellow incorporates. And if you're like, I'm red, he knows immediate stop. We got to reflect and talk about this instead. So anyway, just, I think like safety is going to be the number one thing to prevent re-traumatization with the partner.
Totally. Yeah. I don't know that Thomas ever used a dilator on me. So there was a couple times where he just like lay in the bed next to me while I dilated. And that felt like good. Cause you know, it was helping us like have a more positive experience like together. But a lot of times I was like, I'm good. Like I'm good to do this by myself. You know, it was not something that I like necessarily wanted. We tried a couple times, but it just like didn't feel right for me to do.
Right. Yeah. So I hesitate to say like, oh yeah, here's how you incorporate your partner, because
yeah,
if that does not feel right, do not do it. Like,
right. Yeah. It just like didn't feel right for me. Some people are like, I feel like I have to. I'm like, you don't have to do anything. So you don't have to. Well, this was the last part and I just wanted to include it because it was very sweet. Somebody said, no question, but because of you, I found her and I'm forever grateful. So you're the best. I'm so glad that you came on this podcast today. Thank you so much for being here and just like sharing all of your wisdom with us. The work that you're doing is so, so, so important. So keep doing it. Thank you. Is there anything that I can link for you? Is there anything you want to talk about? You've talked a lot about your clients. Like, how can someone work with you? What does that look like? Like, what kind of program do you have?
Well, I'll first off say I do have a free dilator guide on my website. So if you go to painfreeandfancy.com under resources, I have a dilator 101. It's pretty extensive guide. There's a habit tracker, a dilator log, how to's, and so that's there. If anyone's like, I just don't know where to start, I don't have a pelvic floor therapist, that's a good place to start. I have recommendations for dilators and stuff in there too. So it's free. It's on my website. So, and you can find it on my Instagram through my link tree also. And if you're someone who's just like, this is what I'm looking for, either on my link tree or my website, you can book to schedule a free consultation with me. It's super laid back and chill. And we just talk about where you're at and how we can, you know, get you past this. And if this program that I offer would be a good fit for you, we can talk about that too. So, super chill. I love, love, love getting to connect and meet women who are going through this. Even if we don't work together, it's so, so awesome to be able to hear stories and just inspire and encourage. So,
yeah. And I will link the guide in the episode notes and her website so you guys can have that easy access. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I just really, really enjoyed our conversation. I think it was be so helpful for so many women who are starting the dilating process. So or are in the middle, I can't speak, of dilating. I think this will be so helpful for them. So thank you so much for being here today, Jess. And it's always a pleasure to podcast with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for just giving space for such important topics. Like, this is so sweet, Hannah. I'm so grateful for you. So thank you.
Thanks. Same. Okay, friends, we will talk soon.